Hello, and welcome. I want to talk in this video about the abuse that boys are subjected to growing up, the long-term effects of this abuse, and the silence and indifference to male suffering that perpetuates the cycle. Yeah, some things stick with you, recollections of the past, something you read or heard about. The young boy down the street you saw out on the curb every night, too scared to go home. Or the rumor about that boy in your class that always showed up with bruises, who walked to school in the rain barefoot. Things you saw and looked the other way from. One story that stuck with me the most was one I read back in the year 2000. It was in a local rag, not a major newspaper. It was a small blurb about a 14-year-old boy who was abducted for 7 days and held prisoner by a sadistic pedophile. And that pedophile's name was Ivan Andrew Campbell. And Campbell ran with the Hell's Angels, he was an associate. He had numerous prior convictions for rape and indecent assault against boys. And that boy was tortured and raped for 7 days. He was kept chained in a closet. And he was subjected to the worst tortures you could imagine. He had his genitals pierced. He had his genitals tattooed, along with other parts of his body. And he was branded with hot iron repeatedly, along with numerous other indecencies. And Campbell was arrested and sentenced for the assault in 2001. And the only attention that abduction case got was last year, when Campbell was due for parole. And prior to that, there was no coverage. There was no attention given to the case. So no one knew. It was like it never happened. Now, I often wonder what happened to that boy. And in all reality, without comprehensive intervention and a network of support, it's more than likely that boy fell through the cracks and became a statistic. And when we look at the incidence of child abuse against boys, it's very obvious that there's a lack of research and focus on the issue. And the human body, when experiencing trauma, it seeks to maintain a balance and equilibrium, and opioids are released, along with cortisol and other hormones into the blood. Cortisol levels in children who are consistently subjected to abuse, those levels are raised. These boys, their body is running a marathon every day. They're in a state of constant hyperarousal. Their heart pumps overtime. Their breath and their blood pressure, it's increased. And their body, it's tensed. They're ready for war or escape. And they're hypervigilant. And everything is seen as a potential threat. And they can't regulate. They have irregular sleep patterns, they can't relax, and everything is disrupted. And they're anxious, they're paranoid, and they're waiting for the hammer to drop. And we can see how much focus has been placed on the study of post-traumatic stress disorder with war veterans, along with other research relating to anxiety and stress disorders. But as I've stated before, there's a lack of application and follow-through in regards to veterans, in terms of aftercare upon reintegration. But in comparison to the lack of research on children and the resultant conditions that children experience mentally and physiologically from abuse, there's no comparison. There's a dearth of research in regards to children. And in the case of boys, we're too busy blaming them and condemning them for being male, for being afflicted with testosterone, for being too aggressive, too masculine. We're too busy drugging them up with Adderall, in an effort to suppress their natural drives, to suppress their creativity, their passion. So we don't look at the root causes, we just assign blame. And the boy you are today is not the man you will be tomorrow. We would all do well to remember that. And for a boy, there's no escape for a young boy in an abusive household. And disassociation, it's often their only means of surviving abuse. And it's a shutdown effect. Their heart rate, their blood pressure, their levels of arousal, they drop. And they become numb to pain. The body, it's in survival mode, ensuring that whatever injuries are inflicted, that it won't incapacitate them, that they'll live to fight another day. And after a child has experienced abuse, whether it be physical or sexual, their system, it'll try to counter the physiological effects and restore balance. And if that system is overstimulated, that child's nervous system gets overrun, it's hypersensitized, and the body and the mind is bracing itself for more trauma, you know, ready to restore balance, and everything is in high gear with no finish line in sight. There's no let up, there's no release. All there is stress and tension. And you can see it in any walk of life. Something seemingly minor can prompt a violent reaction from someone. And these people, they're running on autopilot. And the system is oversensitized, the circuits, they're blown. And hyperarousal or dissociation, they're now prompted by very minor things. The body and the brain will find a way to compensate. And all too often, PTSD, self-harming, despair, suicide, acting out is the end result. And PTSD in boys, it is rarely diagnosed. And it's veiled under blaming, shaming. You know, that boy who was spaced out in class, or who couldn't formulate a response fast enough when the teacher popped the question, or the boy who couldn't interact socially, who was socially avoidant, or the kid who reacted with aggression at the drop of a hat for no reason you could make out. Well, there was a reason. And in your experience, looking back, you know, looking back now and evaluating those situations, how much compassion or understanding were those boys afforded? How much assistance was offered? And what attempts at intervention were put in place? You know, a young boy in a classroom or whatever gets challenged or is put on the spot, he may react aggressively, and he won't back down or consider other points of view. So what happens? The teacher or the adult, they react with anger or threats of punitive action, and that boy then flips his lid, he acts out, and he's in full survival mode. He's like an animal let out of a cage. You know, his actions then costing him dearly. The end result, usually equating to that boy being branded violent or overly aggressive, or charges being laid. What does this lead to? Eviction from his immediate environment. What it leads to is further isolation and punishment for having reactions he's not even consciously aware of. And we never stop to consider that those reactions are coming from a place of extreme fear, you know, based on prior experiences and a lifetime of physiological reactions. But of course, boys, they don't get compassion. All they get is punitive. Now, how many men do you know who, after running their partner over with the family car, or cutting off sexual organs off their partners, or stabbing their wife to death, get diagnosed with bipolar disorder or a dissociative condition? And this goes back to the young boy who was abducted for 7 days and tortured. And I grimace every time I have to make this comparison. But what if it was a girl who had been abducted, raped, and tortured? Would her experience have been relegated to the back page of some local news rag? Or would it have been national and potentially international news? Now, featured prominently across media outlets with advocacy groups piping up with their 2 cents. We all know the answer. And you can talk to men with abuse histories, who now as adults have at best only threadbare memories of school and early experiences. And you have a psychologist or a therapist then asking them to think back to their childhood and get in touch with their inner child, or to start associating early experiences with the reactions they experience now. In a war zone, to survive, your body and brain will disassociate. Time and memories, they become distorted. So the concept of regression, and regressing to a childlike state to identify causal links and triggers, it's then near impossible, and it's borderline condescending. Because once in survival mode, this fixed mode of being, you become numb on an emotional level, and you can't see the dangers clearly. You can't see all the angles. You're reacting, you're hypervigilant, but you're easily manipulated. And all someone has to do is read the cues that you're giving off, and they'll give you what you need, and more. And with all the bias and discrimination against males, most men, they walk around with a target on their back, you know, advertising their need for validation and acceptance like a walking billboard. And studies show that children who experience abuse, their brain can experience structural changes. Their cognitive functioning, it's inhibited. And they can't retain information as readily. And they can't learn as fast as the other kids. And within an educational environment, boys, they especially get punished for this. And there's no gender quotas for males. There's no free ride. And this results in limited opportunities for abused boys, and later adult males, you know, financially and socially. And that boy has taken a kick to the teeth every day of his life. He's been accused, he's been shamed, isolated, rejected, and ignored, and now judged and held accountable for our failure to intervene on his behalf. And you cannot expect compassion from a man who has been shown none. A man who has been hardwired, you know, due to abuse and neglect, to be in constant survival mode. And what we can expect is huge costs for us as a society, in terms of healthcare expenditure, in terms of criminal justice costs, mental health supervision, other financial costs, and so on. And yes, there needs to be consequences for violent actions, but what do these men learn? They're still slaves to physiological responses. And incarceration, it only further validates a man's self-belief that he's deserving of this, that the world is a dangerous place, and where the strong take from the weak. And a young man living in this state, without intervention, the only way to calm himself is to self-medicate or find other ways to escape the anxiety, to escape the depression, the self-loathing, the stress, you know, via self-harming, via risk-taking behavior, violence, and so on. And we have the nerve to ask why males choose more violent means of suicide. And boys who are physically and sexually abused, they're far more likely to take their own lives. And those who are sexually abused, far more so. I believe it's 10 to 1. And there's no outlet or support for a male child who experiences this. And all there is shame and stigma. And a boy who is sexually abused is seen as a predator in waiting. And a boy who is physically abused is a soon-to-be domestic abuser. But what happens? I mean, we wash our hands of these young men. You know, we write them off as soon-to-be statistics and perpetrators, instead of giving them the support they need. The support they need to integrate back into society and develop a real sense of self-worth. And this feeds into relationships with women and friendships with other men. Establishing trust with another person, or fostering a positive sense of self under these conditions, it's impossible. And there is no speaking out if speaking out results in rejection, you know, further isolation and shaming. And there's one thing that we can all universally agree on, and that's that the majority of men live in denial, you know, denying their emotions and denying their needs. Men live to serve. It's what they've done since they were boys. And men, I mean, they go their whole lives driven by a voracious need for approval. And a male or a female with an abuse history, they often act out, taking actions that sabotage the giving of that respect or approval, and committing criminal acts, getting pregnant, risky sexual behaviors, so on. Yeah, it's attention and approval seeking, and it's an attempt to prove their worth, and at the same time push others away, as they feel they're not worthy of love or affection, and subconscious. And it makes relationships difficult, to say the least. It makes it rather hard to be intimate with a woman if her definition of intimacy is abuse. And it's the same for men. Males with abuse histories, just like young boys who are passed from caregiver to caregiver, they'll test people, push-pull, to see if those people can weather their shit tests and will actually stick around. Or will that adult simply conform to what they already tell themselves, that they're not worthy of love? for these men and women, as adults and teens in relationships, when the other person withdraws or doesn't comply, they feel rage. And you imagine hating someone to the point you want to obliterate them. That's how strong their love is. You know, those extreme emotions and reactions, they make them feel alive and valued. And if that person can't deliver that or won't devalue or abuse them or comply, then that will invoke anger and resentment. They won't feel loved or appreciated. And someone in the state, they will take extreme measures to provoke these reactions. And have you ever been with a woman and she either said the words out loud or intonated through aggressive or violent actions that if you loved me, you would hit me? Well, I won't hit you because I'm not an enabler. Because people this far down the continuum, they're reacting to past events and trauma. And triggers are everywhere. And transference reactions, they cause a man to repeat the same relationship pattern with women. And both partners are then caught in an abusive cycle. And neither are living in the present. And all there is insecurity, you know, paranoia, and a desperate need for approval and control. And the neglect the man suffered as a boy, the perceived failures he had in the eyes of his mother or father, their belittling of him, and his need to assert his masculinity after the humiliations he suffered, and his need for approval, the self-loathing he wrestles with, all of this leads a man to the one place he knows where he can find love and acceptance. The mother figure he could never please, his perfect princess who would never hurt him. Now, the one idealized figure that is as socially acceptable to project all his needs onto, where he knows he'll be safe and supported. And he will do anything to prolong this fantasy. And whether a male was a recipient of child abuse or not, the negative messages a male receives growing up about himself and the male sex, and the restriction of emotion and vulnerability placed on him, and the persistent shaming and lack of support networks for males, it will, more often than not, lead him back to a point where he seeks this maternal reassurance. And more often than not, what he finds instead is the same cycle he experienced as a child. Yeah. The cycle of persistent criticism, the withholding of love and affection, and the same unreasonable expectations and demands placed on him, and finally rejection. Yeah, his heart being ripped out through his wallet, and his children torn from him. Rinse. Cycle. Repeat. And you've all met women who are with some guy who treats them like shit. And he talks down to them, maybe abuses them. And you shake your head, you're asking her, it's why are you with that asshole? He slaps you around. And her reply is, yeah, but he loves me. And for her, that is love. She can't differentiate. And it's the same with men who have an abuse history. You know, their wife abuses or controls them. But in their eyes, she walks on water. And this is the basis of attachment trauma. They gravitate to what's familiar to them. And the more abuse they receive, the stronger the attachment. And it's reinforcement of their inner dialogue and their self-belief. And it's disordered. And children, I mean, they're dependent on caregivers. And they adapt and develop strategies to get their needs met. And when a caregiver's behavior is erratic or impulsive or abusive, the child has difficulty making sense of it. And this leads to unresolved trauma, which in turn is passed from generation to generation. And in turn, the child becomes impulsive, erratic, reactive. You know, thinking back on the abuse they suffered when they were children, and especially with male survivors of abuse, they deflect, they reframe the experience. Having to face the trauma from their past can lead to severe acting out, as they have no means of regulating, let alone identifying emotions. And they're locked in survival mode, reacting in the here and now. And from their perspective, there is no tomorrow. You know, there's no hope, there's no sense of purpose. There was a quote by Dwight Sonny Abbott, who spent most of his life in and out of jail. And he was forced into the correctional system at the age of 9, and he wrote the book I Cried, You Didn't Listen. And it's a powerful indictment of the California Youth Authority. And he stated that it's easier to throw away a child who reacts to his abuse than attempt to heal his pain. And in today's world, there are very few safe places for men to heal. You know, where males can develop and foster a positive sense of attachment. Now, I think of that 14-year-old boy who was abducted, and I want to imagine his life has happiness in it. That he walks through life now with a sense of pride and purpose, and that we didn't fail him. That he's not just another broken boy made of glass. I like to think that.